Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on rationing when we come back. You know, when you're making $50,000 a year, you pay $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Then you pay a 17% income tax on that same $50,000. Now that's another $8,500. That means you just paid an extra $1,300 by paying your tax on a tax. Now that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It's not the 15.3% that's being advertised. Now isn't that just real special? Now if you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. That's area code 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Call and ask for our free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, Tax and Status, our school, is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it. All right, we've been talking about rationing. Mainly we're thinking about food rationing, but the truth of the matter is rationing is a way of life and has been all of our lives if we stop and think about it, what rationing is. Rationing is the means by which we distribute the scarcity of commodities and services to the widest number of people. The Ten Commandment model, that is the bottom-up model, is called supply and demand. Supply and demand. That rations the goods and services. It's done in what we call the marketplace here in the West. The marketplace determines what the price is going to be. How do we know that a gallon of milk sells for $4 a gallon? Well, because there are places where you can buy milk for $4 a gallon, and if somebody tries to charge $5 a gallon for that gallon of milk, you have a choice. You can pay the $5. Or you can say, no, I think I'll pass and go buy the milk for $4 someplace else. It depends upon how valuable that extra $1 is. I remember one time I was driving across the Mojave Desert this many years ago, and the price of gasoline at that time was about $1.50 a gallon, something like that. And I looked down, and, oh my God, I'm low on fuel. Now we're driving across the desert, and out here in the desert there's a, I don't know if it's a truck stop. There's a gas station out there. I think it was a truck stop. Out in the middle of the desert, all by itself. And gasoline was $2.50 a gallon. It was about double the price of gasoline in Bishop. But I looked at that and I said, I'm not sure I can make it all the way to Bishop. Now, when I left Kingman, Arizona, I should have fueled up there, but I didn't. And so now I'm faced with this dilemma. Do I want to run the risk of running out of gas, or do I want to fill up here in the middle of the desert? So what I did was I pulled into the station. I bought 10 gallons of gas. I figured 10 gallons would get me to Bishop. So I paid $25 for the $10 gallons of gas. And was it worth it to me? Well, yeah, it was worth it. What if they would have charged $3.50 a gallon? Well, yeah, I probably would have paid him $3.50. Because if I ran out of gas, I would have to have a 3A truck come out, and they're going to charge me $75 for the service call. So what we do is we measure the potential risk or cost or inconvenience with, are we willing to give up that amount of money at this time? Now, 10 gallons of gas in the middle of the Mojave Desert is a valuable commodity. That same $10 worth of gas or 10 gallons of gas in downtown Los Angeles was probably worth $1.25 a gallon, you know, at that time. So the gasoline then in the middle of the desert is being rationed, but it's being rationed by price. So as you're driving down the road and you see gasoline for sale at $2.50, you look at your gas gauge and you say, well, I've got enough gas to get to Bishop, so I'm not going to fuel up here. I remember years ago they used to have a rule in New Mexico that you had to burn New Mexico fuel. So I was running a truck at the time, and the fuel in New Mexico was a little pricier than it was in, oh, say, Arizona or Texas. And so when you're running your truck across New Mexico, you have a choice. Normally, you just drive your truck when you run out of gas, run low on fuel. You pull into a truck stop and you fuel up. So I outfitted my truck with extra fuel tanks so that I carried about, I think it was 220 gallons. And so I could run my truck about 1,200 miles on 220 gallons, as I recall. About 6 miles to the gallon, something on that order, 6-7 miles to the gallon. And so as a result of that, I didn't have to fuel up in New Mexico. And so the added savings of not having to buy fuel there made it worth putting the extra fuel tanks on. So before I would leave the state of Arizona, I would fuel up. Now I'm full of gas. Now I can drive all the way to Texas without fueling up. It's a form of rationing. In other words, it's self-imposed rationing, isn't it? And when we look at taxes, for instance, taxes are a form of rationing. In World War II, they put on what was known as a luxury tax. Luxury tax. If you bought something that was a luxury, like an automobile, for instance, in World War II was a luxury. They weren't making new ones, and so when you went to buy a car, it had to be a used one. So if you're going to buy a used car, they placed a luxury tax on it. And so the dealer would say, okay, we're going to sell you this car for $1,000, but the luxury tax, you know, is $75. And the government would get into the act, and it's a form of taxation. The theory behind it is, as well, if you can afford $1,000 for a car, you can afford the $75 luxury tax, which is going to go for fighting the war and blah, blah, blah. And if you're going to run around, you know, indulging in these luxuries, well, you can pay your fair share to support the cost of this war and so on down the line. So we find that rationing then doesn't apply just to food. It doesn't apply just to gasoline. It applies to a wide range of goods and services, and the methodology or the modality by which we distribute those goods and services. Now, here on planet Earth, we only have two systems that are available to us. One is the Ten Commandments system, which is very ancient, goes back to Mount Sinai with Moses. And the other is called the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, we think of that as being fairly recent, but the truth of the matter is this top-down model, and that's what the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto is. It's a central planning top-down model in which a strong unilateral power imposes its will upon a vast host of vassals. Those are serfs or people like you and I, citizens, Joe Sixpacks. And they impose it from the top down through what we call the police power. And in ancient times, this was called the Babylonian mystery religion. It comes under the guise of religion a lot of times, or it comes under the guise of government. It can be the king imposing taxes, or it can be the king making demands or imposing his will upon us. It's something outside of the normal marketplace. You see, in using the example of the gasoline in the middle of the desert, nobody stuck a gun at my head and said, you're going to buy this gasoline whether you like it or not. It's not like the top-down model in New Mexico where they say, okay, well, we're going to place this tax on gasoline. And normal people don't have enough gasoline to get from Arizona to Texas, so they're going to have to fuel up somewhere in New Mexico. You're going to have to buy some fuel in New Mexico and pay the New Mexico tax. Now, without arguing over the necessity for the tax or the rightness or wrongness or the good or bad of it, you know, I'm just pointing out that that's a modality from the top down rather than a marketplace or a market force decision. If the merchants, if the people who are selling gasoline had their druthers, they wouldn't be charging you 17 cents a gallon for a road use tax or 40 cents a gallon for a state tax or hidden taxes. The objective of the merchant, the guy that's selling you the goods, is to deliver it to you as cheap as possible so that he can sell more of it. He would rather make a 10 cent profit and sell you 1,000 gallons than to make a dollar profit and sell you 5 or 10. The more he sells, the more he makes. So the rationing then is a modality that is sometimes imposed from the top down, or it comes from the bottom up. Now the bottom up modality deals with supply and demand and the market forces, that is, well, what will the market bear? A lot of times people say, well, that's unreasonable or that's unfair. Well, again, the man in the desert has the gasoline and I want it. And he determined that $2.50 a gallon is what the market would bear. Now, it probably costs him more to get that fuel delivered out in the middle of the desert than it does if you're in a city or a town, probably. And so he has to price that in. And the marketplace will determine what the value is in a bottom-up scenario. Now, rationing in general is the controlled distribution of resources and scarce goods or services. Rationing controls the size of the ration, one's allotted portion of the resources being distributed on a particular day or at a particular time. In economics, it is often common to use the word rationing to refer to one of the roles that prices play in the marketplace. While rationing, as the word is usually used, is called non-price rationing. Using prices to ration means that those with the most money or other assets and who want a product the most are first to receive it. Such rationing happens daily in the market economy. Non-price rationing follows other principles of distribution. So let's discuss just the latter, dropping the non-price qualifier, to refer only to the marketing done from the top down by an authority of some sort. Usually it's the government. In market economics, rationing artificially restricts demand, and it's done to keep prices below the equilibrium market clearing price determined by the process of supply and demand in an unfettered market. Thus, rationing can be complementary to price controls. An example of rationing in the face of rising prices took place in the Netherlands, where there was rationing of gasoline in the 1973 energy crisis. And here in the United States, they didn't impose rationing, but there was a plan afoot. Gasoline ration stamps were printed as a result of the 1973 oil crisis here in the United States. Most people don't know that, but they were getting ready to ration gasoline. Now, a reason for setting the price lower than would clear the market may be that there is a shortage, which would drive the market price very high. High prices, especially in the case of necessities, are unacceptable with regard to those who cannot afford them. Traditionalist economics argue, however, that high prices act to reduce waste of the scarce resource while also proving or providing incentive to produce more. This approach requires assuming no horizontal inequity or inequality. Now, in wartime, it's usually imperative for a government to maintain the support of this part of the population. So, to maintain equality, especially since in most countries the working class and poor families contribute most to the soldiers. So if you'll take a look right now at rationing of rice, for instance, it isn't that there is a particular shortage of rice. It's that the stores decided that you can buy one 20-pound bag of rice. You can't buy two, three, or four. But wait a minute. Let's suppose that you want four bags of rice. And you walk into the store and you pick up four bags of rice. You put them in your shopping cart. You go to the checkout counter and they say, oh, wait a minute. Wait, only one bag per customer. You cannot buy four bags of rice. So they take three bags of rice out of your cart, put it back on the pile for the other customers. And you look at that and you say, well, that's reasonable. I mean, after all, there's a shortage of it, and we want to make sure that everybody, you know, has rice rather than one person having four bags that he can't eat. We'll distribute this one bag to four people so that all four of them will have rice. Rather than one guy having four bags of rice, we'll have four families with one-fourth as much rice. Now, normally in the marketplace, we determine our purchases based upon what our needs are. Most people don't buy four bags of rice. They buy one bag of rice, and next week they'll come back and buy another bag of rice, and then the following week. So if they use a bag of rice a week, that's 52 bags a year. They'll buy one bag a week. Very few people will go out into the marketplace and buy 52 bags of rice once a year. They might buy four bags of rice once a month. But they're not going to buy 52 bags a year. Now, we here in the West have gotten used to that because of our supermarket just-in-delivery or just-in-time delivery system. But the reality of life is that rice only comes in once a year. And you need a one-year supply. So everybody who's going to use rice, depending upon how much you use, needs to have a one-year supply in stock in your pantry at all times. Now, that's to ensure that you don't have a rice shortage or that you don't run out. All right. Now, governments are beginning to ration this rice because it's being hoarded by people. And so there's a word called hoarding that comes into our vocabulary here. And black market. Black market. Now, the rice scenario, you walk into the store and you want to buy four bags. Well, if you're innovative, what you'll do is you'll walk in and you'll buy your one bag and you'll walk out to your car and put it in the car. Then you'll walk back into the store, go over to the rice and pick up a bag of rice, and then you will walk out and go to a different checkout counter and then take that bag of rice out to your car. That's two. And then you'll go back into the store a third time and pick up another bag of rice and then go to a different checkout line. And then that's three and then four and then five. Now, typically, if something's being rationed, that means that it's in short supply and it sends a signal to all of us and it says, oh my God, I want to make sure I've got my share. And so psychologically, what this does is it sends a subliminal message to all of us that we want more. We just naturally want more. And so you actually, when you impose this rationing from the top down, you actually cause a greater shortage. You cause more psychological turmoil. If you didn't ration it, the average guy, if he doesn't know there's a shortage, isn't going to buy four bags by making four trips into the store. It's when you tell him that there's a shortage that it sends a signal to him that says, I need to buy more. So rationing from the top down is actually counterproductive if, in fact, your goal is to distribute the scarce commodity to people. The price mechanism does it much more effectively. Let's take a look at the price of gasoline. We Americans have had artificially cheap gas in this country for all of our lives. You people in Europe have your gasoline rationed to you by taxes. And the last time I looked, the price of gas in England was $9.70 for unleaded and $10.40 for diesel. Well, here in the United States, for all of you Europeans over there, diesel here in this country is about $4.50 a gallon, and gasoline's about $4 a gallon. And that's because we don't have the high taxes that you have. So your governments are rationing fuel to you and have been for the last 50 or 75 years. And they ration it through the price mechanism. You know, there's all the gasoline out there you want at $9.70 a gallon. You know, for you people in England, it's about $2, so it'd be around £4 per gallon, you know, or $4.50. So you've got rationing going on. It's been going on forever. But we Americans have less rationing because there's an abundance of it. So now, with the price mechanism going up to $4 a gallon, there's plenty of gas out there. It's just that all of us have to tighten our belts a little bit. Now let's suppose that you're a Bill Gates. And this is where the communists come in. And they say, well, look, this guy Bill Gates, he's got lots of money. And it doesn't make any difference to him whether the price of gas is $5 a gallon or $50 a gallon. He's going to go buy all the gas that he wants. So he's going to get more than his share. Okay, that's true. The price mechanism from the bottom up, supply and demand program, does not limit the amount of gasoline that anybody can buy. It's just limited by the amount of money that you have. So in the last program I said, Rolls-Royce automobiles are rationed, and they're rationed by price. Now, you could also artificially lower the price of a Rolls-Royce to $10,000 and then just ration them. You know, they make about, I don't know, a few thousand of them a year. But you see, when you do that, the Rolls-Royce people will stop making them because they cost $100,000 to make. So oftentimes governments come in and they set prices. This is called price control. And price control also creates shortages. So the minute you put on price controls or you try to enforce top-down rationing outside of the marketplace, then shortages develop. That's where the black market comes in. Because now the price on the black market goes up. Now, of course, there are sanctions. If you get caught selling this stuff or buying this stuff, you could go to jail. And so that's the mechanism. Fear is the mechanism by which this top-down rationing is implemented. Now, in wartime, it's usually imperative for a government to maintain the support of this part of the population, that is, the poorest people in the community, to maintain equality. Especially since in most countries, the working class and poor families contribute most of the soldiers that go out to fight the wars are done by the poor people. Well, I remember in World War II, we were very modest people. You know, my dad and my granddad worked in the mill. And so my Uncle Carol and my dad, they went into the army. Most of the people that go into the military are not the sons of Bill Gates. They're Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife's children. Now, rationing using coupons is only one kind of non-price rationing. For example, scarce products can be rationed using queues, that is, standing in line. This is seen, for example, at amusement parks, where one pays a price to get in and then need not pay any price to go on the rides. They do this in Silver Dollar City. You know, if you buy a season pass and you got your $200 ticket, you know, you can ride on any of the rides. Well, now when you get onto a popular ride, you know, like the roller coaster, you have to stand in line in order to get your turn. And we do this in school. Remember, you had to stand in line to get into the cafeteria. Similarly, in the absence of road pricing, access to roads is rationed in a first-come, first-served queuing process, leading to congestion. So the traffic jam that you experience in Los Angeles, if you don't want that rationing, then you move out of Los Angeles and you move to Isabella, Missouri, where we don't have any congestion. Traffic congestion is non-existent here. Of course, automobiles are practically non-existent here. So we have a road, it's two lanes. You people in L.A. have eight lanes, and you're jam-packed. So you use the congestion or the queuing process, first come, first serve. Now, Authorities which introduce rationing often have to deal with the rationed goods being sold illegally on the black market. All right. The authorities then create what we call the black market. The market isn't green or black or red. Markets don't have colors. That's a term like terrorist. Or some politically incorrect term like cult. Oh, you belong to that cult. Well, you know, Jesus belonged to a cult. He was not in the mainstream of Pharisee religion at his time in life, or at that time in history. And so Christianity, as we know it today, was a cult looked down upon. So why would we look at the word cult as being something that's wicked or evil? Well, it's something that's sold to us. You know, it's like racist. I covered that story here on race and race relations and racists. The world's number one racist is God Almighty Himself, the creator of the universe. He's the world's number one racist. So, discrimination is another term that we've been taught. Oh my God, he discriminates. Well, yeah, I discriminate and I'm a racist. I don't deny it. You see, the language loses its meaning when we use the words, terms, and phrases inappropriately. And that's what's really the problem here. The market isn't a black market, it's a created black market to shame you, to make you feel bad about your conduct, about your beliefs, or about your practices in order to change that belief or practice. So we call you a racist, and we say, oh, he's a racist. Okay, that shames you, and then you say, well, I'll practice integration because I don't want you to be, down on me and call me a racist. Now, I don't want to rehash the race issue, but the point I'm making is that the word cult, I don't want to be a cultist, I'm going to join the Catholic Church. Well, hell, all the Catholics in the early days were cultists, you know. When they started, they were the opposite of some other religious system or religious ideology. So the first guy that starts this off, he's just a one guy show, and so he's a cultist. He goes out like Brigham Young and Joseph Smith, you know. When Smith started that Mormon religion, you know, he started off by himself. And so it's the Mormon cult. Well, now there's about 12 million of those Mormons. Are you going to call them a cult? Hell, there's more Mormons out there than most of the mainstream Protestant religions. So over time, they evolve from cult status to something else. And so it's the same religion. And whether you got one guy, 50 guys, or 5 million guys, you know, you're talking about something that's non-mainstream, then we want to make you feel bad about your religious beliefs, so we call you a cult. See? And then that's supposed to make you self-conscious, and so you don't want to be a cult, so you're going to leave Mormonism, go join Catholicism, so that people won't call you a cultist. Alright, same thing is true here with this black market. They've hung a label on the marketplace, and that's all the marketplace is. It's the clearing place for setting prices and rationing the goods and services. And it's the bottom-up approach, the marketplace. And so the marketplace, then, is the black market. The bottom-up, thou shalt not steal, Ten Commandments clearinghouse for distributing goods and services is the black market. And that label, black market, is hung on that marketplace by the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto top-down marketing system, in which we are imposing a top-down rationing scheme. And so when the bottom-up rationing scheme comes into play in opposition to that 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto scheme from the top down, we hang a label on it to make you feel real bad about your activities, and we call it the black market. Oh, you're one of those black marketeers. Yes, boys and girls, little Georgie Gordon is a black marketeer. All right, let me give you a reminder here at the midway point that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. And the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can all be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Now, keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about rationing. And today's program, we're talking about the black market. So now we find then that the black market is really just a label hung on by the political authorities, hung on the free market system of price and supply and demand. It's nothing more, nothing less. Has nothing to do with color. Now, the concept in economics and banking of credit rationing describes the situation when a bank limits the supply of loans, although it has enough funds to loan out, and the supply of loans has not yet equaled the demand of prospective borrowers. Changing the price of the loans is called the interest rate. So banks then ration credit through the interest rate. An interest rate does not necessarily mean the demand of supply of the loans are in equilibrium. They don't necessarily equilibrate the demand and supply of the loans. The bank finds the raising or that raising the interest rate beyond a certain level actually reduces its profitability. Joseph E. Stiglitz and Andrew Weiss's 1981 paper was one of the early papers to explain why the bank, or any lending institution for that matter, may ration credit to its borrowers if the bank was unable to perfectly distinguish the risky borrowers from the safe ones, and the loan contracts were subject to limited liability. If project returns were less than the debt obligation, the borrower bears no responsibility to pay out of her pocket. Well, we see that going on right now in the housing market. Those loans should have been rationed, but they weren't. They just went ahead and made loans to all these people, whether they could qualify for these loans or not, irrespective of whether or not they had the means of paying back the loan. So when housing prices fell, these people could not pay those payments. And many of those houses today, around a fourth of them so far, are what we call underwater. That is, the house is not worth as much as the loan against it. And so you got a $300,000 house and a $350,000 loan. Raising the interest rate may cause adverse selection, which would lead to increases in the number of risky borrowers in the pool of aspiring borrowers. With higher debt obligations due to higher interest rates, only the risky borrowers with higher returns would be ready to take up the bank's contract. Recall that with limited liability, that's insurance, the borrowers repay the loan if successful, but escape the consequences of failure of the project if it fails. Thus, only borrowers with riskier projects would be ready to take on the higher interest rate loans. Thus, raising the interest rate increases the proportion of the risky borrowers in the project and reduces the overall profitability of the bank. As we have just seen, rationing was not imposed. The riskier borrowers came out and borrowers borrowed the money to buy all these houses on these adjustable rate mortgages. And so you got all these risky people that default on the loan. So the bank loans you the $350,000 to buy the house. Then when the value of the house goes down to $300,000, they just walk away and give you the keys, and there you are. Now you've got the house, which now is valued at $350,000 on paper, so the bank has to write it down. So rationing then is done by interest, but it's also done by the credit application in the marketplace. So Bill Gates can come into the marketplace and borrow money because he's got a lot of assets. And then you and I go into the marketplace and we want to borrow money. And the bank says, well, no, we're not going to loan to you, Gordon, because you don't have the kind of balance sheet that Bill Gates has. Now, somehow, when the bank rations credit, we don't sit there and say they're black marketeering now, are they? So, when a loan shark loans money, or you go into a pawn shop, or you want to borrow money, we've got a thing here in this state called a title loan. Now, they declared that loan sharking was a bad business. I don't know if loan sharking is a bad business. So, in the Bible, God prohibits the pricing of borrowing based upon a percentage, based upon usury or interest. And so our state comes along and subverts the law of God, that is the biblical law, by enforcing or by creating its own law, its own usury laws. So it's in the Bible, you have a prohibition against usury at all, period. You can't charge it. And then the civil authorities, that is your political authorities, they come along and say, oh, no, we're going to come along and we'll create a different law. And then we'll go to you people and say, well, we want you to practice the law of Missouri. We don't want you to practice the law of God. And so we find that out here in the marketplace. And you'll find that today you pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. You do not practice the law that says you shall have no other gods before me. So we practice idolatry and we go out and we become the citizens, the subjects of foreign and alien gods so that we can practice this thing called interest and usury in opposition to the laws of God. So the civil law state, the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, is an idolatry. That's what that boils down to. So the communism is idolatry. It runs the opposite. It's 180 degree opposite then from the law of God. So it isn't surprising when we look at the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto that it's a different program than the 10 commandments. And it has a different legal system. It has a different modality of implementation. It's a top-down modality as opposed to a marketplace bottom-up. So, rationing has long been used in the military, especially the Navy, to make supplies last for a defined duration, such as the duration of the voyage. To ration the supplies, they're divided up into equal portions for each person for each day, or even for each meal, over the expected life of the voyage. Then there's civilian rationing, like here in the United States. Rationing is often instituted during wartime for civilians as well. For example, each person may be given ration coupons allowing him or her to purchase a certain amount of a product each month. Rationing often includes food and other necessities for which there is a shortage, including materials needed for the war effort, such as rubber tires, leather shoes, clothing, and gasoline. Now, towards the end of the First World War, panic buying in the United Kingdom prompted rationing of first sugar, then meat for the rest of the war. During World War II, rationing existed in many countries, including the United Kingdom and the United States. A gasoline rationing system was put in place in the United States, and gasoline shortages were especially acute in the eastern states because in the early 1940s, most petroleum was carried by tanker. The conveyance became dangerous with U-boats operating off the United States coast. So accordingly, until the Big Inch and the Little Big Inch pipelines started pumping petroleum from East Texas to the northeastern states. So one of the reasons for putting in these pipelines was to reduce the vulnerability to the U-boat attacks. And there actually was a gasoline shortage in 1942 on the east coast of the United States, but not the west coast. And out here on the west coast, I reported to you last time, my Uncle Lloyd reported to me that they were burning gasoline by the tanker loads out in the open ocean to get rid of it, because refineries run 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And you got to have a place to put it. So if there's no storage tanks and they're all full, then you load it in barges and you take it out and burn it up. Get rid of it. A national speed limit of 35 miles an hour was imposed to save fuel and tires. So depending on need, civilians were issued one of a number of different classifications of gasoline ration cards, entitling them to different quantities of gasoline each week. When purchasing gas, one had to present a gas card along with a ration book. So coupons were made valid for only a set period to forestall hoarding. Now, to get a classification and ration stamps, one had to appear before a local board to certify a need for gasoline and ownership of no more than 5 tires. All tires in excess of 5 per driver were confiscated by the government because of the rubber shortages. An A card was the lowest priority of gas rationing, and it entitled the holder to 3 to 4 gallons of gas per week. B cards were issued to workers in the military industry, entitling their holder up to 8 gallons of gas per week. C cards were granted to persons deemed very essential to the war effort, such as doctors. T rations were made available for truckers. And then lastly, the X cards entitled the holder to unlimited supplies and were the highest priority in the system. Ministers of religion, for instance, got the X cards. Police, volunteer firemen, and civil defense workers fell within this category. A scandal erupted when 200 congressmen received these X cards. All right, so let's pause here for a moment. Let's start thinking about gasoline rationing. We have here in the United States a new system coming online, and it's called your National Identification Card. Now, the government cannot compel you to get this national ID card. And there's a story here in the Bible. It's in Revelation 13, which is called the Mark of the Beast. The Mark of the Beast. My personal opinion is the Mark of the Beast is your Social Security number. It's your universal ID number, and everybody in the world has one of those. All the countries of the world have Social Security. Now, in order for us to have the national ID card, you got to go down and apply for it. You got to have your picture taken. Now, most people do that anyway. They have a driver's license or they have a passport, so they have their national identification. Your government knows who you are and where you live and all about you. So, in order to get all of us miscreants out here in the marketplace to come in and get it, what they'll do is they'll say, okay, and here's the precursor to it. So you got $4 gasoline, and pretty shortly you're going to have gasoline rationing. Probably not in 2008 because of the election, but in 2009 you'll have rationing. And that's because you're going to have $6 a gallon gas. Remember, they're moving this price up. Now, when you hit $6 a gallon gas, you people are going to scream your heads off, and you're going to say, we want cheaper gas. And the government will say, okay, I've got to have rationing then. So they'll come in with price controls, and they'll say to ExxonMobil and the rest of them, say, well, now you can't raise prices anymore. The official price for gasoline will be $6. And we're going to have a rationing system, and if you want to get your ration card, you have to have your national ID card. It's just that simple. No national ID card, no gasoline. Now what are you going to do? Well, now, here's where this black market comes into play. And during World War II, there were different people that had different gasoline cards. Now, my dad was working in the defense industry, worked in a shipyard, so he got 8 gallons a week with his B card. In fact, he might have probably had a C card. He probably could get that C card because he worked in the defense industry. So now, ahead of time, you might want to be thinking about that and say, well, should I get my minister's credentials or should I join the local volunteer fireman? Now, there's quite a few people here in our local area that belong to the volunteer fire department. So those guys are going to have what's known as an X card, the volunteer fireman. And the volunteer fireman, he gets a little benefit, doesn't he? The policeman, he gets a little benefit. See, if you're a policeman or a volunteer fireman, you're going to get your X card. Of course, you're going to have your national ID, aren't you? Now, the Amish people won't have to go get their national ID card because they're not going to be buying any gasoline anyway because they don't use the stuff. See where you're coming from? You'll never get all the people in the country to get their national ID card because many of us think it's the mark of the beast and we're going to avoid that. But life is going to become harder for those of us that try to avoid this mark of the beast. Most Americans, most people in the world for that matter, don't care anything about the laws of God, the laws of Moses, the Bible, biblical law, the scripture. They couldn't care less. They're concerned about the immediate. They're concerned about gratification. They're concerned about, am I going to have gasoline, sugar, tires for my car? And those people will go down and get their national ID card. They'll get their ration card. For the rest of us bottom feeders out here, what are we going to do? We're going to rely upon the black market. You know, that's the label, the free marketplace. The price is going to be something higher than $6 a gallon. See, out here in the rationed marketplace, you'll get 6 or 8 gallons of gas, and it'll cost you $6 a gallon. Now, for people like me that don't have this ration card, don't have national ID, then the only place for me to get it will be on the black market. So you can rest assured that the policemen and the volunteer firemen who have the X cards will go out and fill up their gas tanks. And then they will come in and they'll say, okay, well now, Gordon, you don't have a ration card and you can't get gasoline, so no, this is illegal. See? So the policemen and the firemen will sell their gas and they'll siphon it out of their gas tanks into 5-gallon cans and they'll offer it for sale on the black market. And then a George Gordon will come along and we'll have to pay $12 a gallon for gasoline. And they'll make a $6 a gallon profit. And, you know, for guys like me that need it for their chainsaws and rototillers and things like that, I mean, we won't be paying $12 a gallon to put it in our gas tanks and drive around. That isn't going to happen. But we'll need a little gasoline, you know, for our chainsaws and a little garden tractors and things like that. And so we'll be happy to pay $12 a gallon, double. During World War II, the official price of gasoline was about 20 cents a gallon. And I remember my dad paying Walter Turkelson 50 cents a gallon for colored gas. 50 cents a gallon in wartime. Now, here's the way this colored gas works. They put a dye in it. And then you're out here driving down the highway. And they in World War II, they used to open your hood. So you'd get in a roadblock and you'd stop. And they would open the hood of your car and they'd look inside at the sediment bowl. And if it had this colored gas, purple gas, whatever color it was, that was farm gas. Now see, farmers had an unlimited, they had an X card. They could get all the gasoline they wanted. No shortage of gas for a farmer. But it was colored so that he couldn't put it into his pickup and drive up and down highways. He could burn it in his tractors. All right, so the gasoline is the same. They do that in New Mexico today. And in fact, there was in Nebraska. They have these fuel tests. And you stop, and they'll look in your tank, and they'll take a sample of it. And if it's got farm fuel in there, they'll give you a fine, or they'll give you a ticket, or they'll punish you because you're cheating. You're not paying your tax. I had a student the other day was coming through Nebraska, and he got caught in a roadblock up there, and they're checking trucks up there for diesel and off-road use. Now, here's what my dad did. My dad, since the system at that time, they didn't check the gas tank. They opened the hood and looked at the sediment bowl. Now, today, they actually open your gas tank and they take a sample out of your gas tank. So, wherever there's human beings, there's innovation. So here's what my dad did. He put a 2-gallon tank underneath the floorboards of his car. And that had the official gasoline in it. That was the official gas. That's the good stuff. The ration stuff. He got that with his ration card. Then he went out to Walter Turkelson's and he just filled up out there with the purple gas in his gas tank. Now he's driving down the road. And he's coming up to a roadblock. So he reaches down and under the seat and he turns the fuel selector valve, just like we do in an airplane. Just like we do on our pickups today, you got 2 gas tanks, you got a fuel selector valve. So you turn the fuel selector valve over to, 2-gallon can or the 2 gallons under the gas tank, under the floorboards. The good gas, the ration gas, the right colored gas. You pull into the roadblock, and by now, if you got 60 seconds or 90 seconds, or a couple of minutes, the gas has changed now from purple over to the regular gas, and so they open it up, look at it, and they pass you through. You reach down, turn your fuel selector gas valve again, and you're burning the prohibited fuel. Now, wherever there are human beings, there will be innovations to defeat these anti-black market programs. You can rest assured that the people who have the unlimited gas cards, that is doctors, clergymen, policemen, firemen, civil defense workers, all of those people will be buying all the gasoline that they can get their hands on and selling it on the black market. It will create a free marketplace in gasoline. This is why in Kosovo there was no shortage of gasoline at $20 a gallon. Because there's gasoline out there. Now, the average Joe Sixpack doesn't have it. Here's another little ruse that went on in World War II. The people would ration, since they were suffering from rationing, they'd go down and register a car. It was common for people to have 2 or 3 cars registered. They were paying registration fees to register these cars so that they could get the ration cards for them. So while one person could only have 5 tires, your wife could go down and your adult children could go down and they could get ration cards. They could get tires. And so the people who were in the know, they had 20, 30 tires. And they were selling those tires on the black market. To the people that didn't know how to, couldn't figure out how to do that, and then the people on the black market were paying double. That's the regular price that comes. You might actually end up paying triple or quadruple. I'm not saying double is the magic number, but you need tires, to run your car. You got to have tires. Where are you going to get tires? Well, you can't get them from Big O Tire Company because they're not going to sell them to you without your ration cards. Those are the official, the official places to buy. And so what the black market does is it furnishes through the marketplace, the market supply and demand mechanism. It supplies all the gasoline that you need. There was never any shortage of gasoline for my dad. At 50 cents a gallon, he had all the gasoline he wanted. Now the official price was 20 cents. So he had to pay 30 cents a gallon more for it. Well, you know, he probably was not burning gasoline up for no good reason, but he'd never wanted for gasoline. He had plenty. And the farmers were just doing a land office business, and of course the people that are the mechanics that are putting in these under the floorboard gas tanks. Now, the other day they said, well, they're sticking a hose into your tank and taking out a sample. Okay. So what you do is you mount fuel tanks on your truck that has a pipe that goes all the way down to the bottom and it seals off. That's the gas tank filler spout. Okay. And it's sealed off and it's got the right color fuel in it. Now, there has to be then a secret opening to this same gas tank that is not out in the open, where you fill it up with the illegal gas, say, or the illegal fuel, so that when you get caught alongside the road, they open up your fuel tank and they stick it in, they come out, and it looks like the fuel tank is full or half full or whatever it happens to be of the colored gas. But in reality, it's not colored gas. It's the real McCoy, but there's only a gallon of that in the filler tube, which is sealed off from the rest of the illegal gas. And I mean, boys and girls, let me tell you that when you put on this top-down rationing system, wherever there is a mind that works with an IQ above 80, there will be cheating. And that's just the way life is. It's always been that way. It's that way today, and it's going to continue to be that way. There will be a marketplace for the black market to work in, and that market, the free marketplace, will produce fuel. It'll be god-awful high, but it'll be there. Now, the British Ministry of Food refined the rationing process in the early 1940s to ensure the population did not starve when food imports were severely restricted and local production limited due to the large number of men fighting the war. Rationing did not end in the United Kingdom until the 1950s. And you'll see also rationing in the United Kingdom during and after World War II and civilian price time or peacetime rationing. This occurred in places, you know, like communist Romania, North Korea, China, and Cuba today. So what you see here is rationing occurs under the communist system. In all of the communist countries, you have rationing. And now that we have adopted communism here in the United States, and now that all of us Americans are practicing communists, having adopted all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, we will have rationing here also, because it's a part and parcel with the communist system. All right, we're about out of time, so let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and in 112 countries daily over the internet and radio worldwide. For more information about the Law School and Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal. It says our time is up, so we'll have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.